standing so close, was that this tough-looking guy appeared to have used some kind of self-tanner or concealer makeup on his face. Whatever. Everyone hates to be pale in the winter. You're fine, Nunez said, completing his sweep and stowing the wand. Thanks. The man started collecting his belongings from the tray. As he did, Nunez noticed that the two fingers protruding from his bandage each bore a tattoo. The tip of his index finger bore the image of a crown, and the tip of his thumb bore that of a star. Seems everyone has tattoos these days, Nunez thought, although the pads of his fingertips seemed like painful spots to get them. Those tats hurt? The man glanced down at his fingertips and chuckled.
Less than you might think.
Lucky, Nunez said. Mine hurt a lot. I got a mermaid on my back when I was in boot camp.
A mermaid? The bald man chuckled.
Yeah, he said, feeling sheepish. The mistakes we make in our youth.
I hear you, the bald man said. I made a big mistake in my youth, too.
Now I wake up with her every morning. They both laughed as the man headed off. Child's play, Malak thought, as he moved past Nunez and up the escalator toward the Capitol building. The entry had been easier than anticipated. Malak's slouching posture and padded belly had hidden his true physique, while the makeup on his face and hands had hidden the tattoos that covered his body. The true genius, however, was the sling, which disguised the potent object Malak was transporting into the building. A gift for the one man on earth who can help me obtain what I seek. Chapter 5. The world's largest and most technologically advanced museum is also one of the world's best-kept secrets. It houses more pieces than the Hermitage, the Vatican Museum, and the New York Metropolitan combined. Yet despite its magnificent collection, few members of the public are ever invited inside its heavily guarded walls. Located at 4210 Silver Hill Road, just outside of Washington, D.C., the museum is a massive zigzag-shaped edifice constructed of five interconnected pods, each pod larger than a football field. The building's bluish metal exterior barely hints at the strangeness within. A 600,000-square-foot alien world that contains a dead zone, a wet pod, and more than 12 miles of storage cabinets. Tonight, scientist Catherine Solomon was feeling unsettled as she drove her white Volvo up to the building's main security gate. The guard smiled. Not a football fan, Ms. Solomon? He lowered the volume on the Redskins' playoff pregame show. Catherine forced a tense smile.
It's Sunday night.
Oh, that's right. Your meeting.
Is he here yet?
She asked anxiously. He glanced down at his paperwork. I don't see him on the log.
I'm early.
Catherine gave a friendly wave and continued up the winding access road to her usual parking spot at the bottom of the small, two-tiered lot. She began collecting her things and gave herself a quick check in the rearview mirror, more out of force of habit than actual vanity. Catherine Solomon had been blessed with the resilient Mediterranean skin of her ancestry, and even at 50 years old, she had a smooth, olive complexion. She used almost no makeup and wore her thick black hair unstyled and down. Like her older brother Peter, she had gray eyes and a slender, patrician elegance. You two might as well be twins, people often told them. Their father had succumbed to cancer when Catherine was only 7, and she had little memory of him. Her brother, 8 years Catherine's senior and only 15 when their father died, had begun his journey toward becoming the Solomon Patriarch much sooner than anyone had ever dreamed. As expected, though, Peter had grown into the role with the dignity and strength befitting their family name. To this day, he still watched over Catherine as though they were just kids. Despite her brother's occasional prodding and no shortage of suitors, Catherine had never married. Science had become her life partner, and her work had proven more fulfilling and exciting than any man could ever hope to be. Catherine had no regrets. Her field of choice, noetic science, had been virtually unknown when she first heard of it. But in recent years, it had started opening new doors of understanding into the power of the human mind.
Our untapped potential is truly shocking.
Catherine's two books on noetics had established her as a leader in this obscure field, but her most recent discoveries, when published, promised to make noetic science a topic of mainstream conversation around the world. Tonight, however, Science was the last thing on her mind. Earlier in the day, she had received some truly upsetting information relating to her brother.
I still can't believe it's true.
She'd thought of nothing else all afternoon. A pattering of light rain drummed on her windshield, and Catherine quickly gathered her things to get inside. She was about to step out of her car when her cell phone rang. She checked the caller ID and inhaled deeply. Then she tucked her hair behind her ears and settled in to take the call. 6 miles away, Malach was moving through the corridors of the U.S. Capitol building with a cell phone pressed to his ear. He waited patiently as the line rang. Finally, a woman's voice answered.
Yes?
We need to meet again, Malach said.
There was a long pause.
Is everything all right?
I have new information, Malach said.
Tell me.
Malach took a deep breath.
That which your brother believes is hidden in D.C.
Yes?
It can be found.
Catherine Solomon sounded stunned.
You're telling me it is real?
Malach smiled to himself.
Sometimes a legend that endures for centuries endures for a reason.
Chapter 6. Is this as close as you can get? Robert Langdon felt a sudden wave of anxiety as his driver parked on First Street, a good quarter mile from the Capitol building.
Afraid so, the driver said. Homeland Security. No vehicles near landmark buildings anymore. I'm sorry, sir.
Langdon checked his watch, startled to see it was already 6:50. A construction zone around the National Mall had slowed them down, and his lecture was to begin in 10 minutes.
Weather's turning, the driver said, hopping out and opening Langdon's door for him. You'll want to hurry.
Langdon reached for his wallet to tip the driver, but the man waved him off.
Your host already added a very generous tip to the charge.
Typical Peter, Langdon thought, gathering his things.
Okay, thanks for the ride.
The first few raindrops began to fall as Langdon reached the top of the gracefully arched concourse that descended to the new underground visitor's entrance. The Capitol Visitor Center had been a costly and controversial project. Described as an underground city to rival parts of Disney World, this subterranean space reportedly provided over 500,000 square feet of space for exhibits, restaurants, and meeting halls. Langdon had been looking forward to seeing it, although he hadn't anticipated quite this long a walk. The skies were threatening to open at any moment, and he broke into a jog, his loafers offering almost no traction on the wet cement. Addressed for a lecture, not a 400-yard downhill dash through the rain,